Good morning. I'm Beth Ann Koslovich.
And I'm Chris Vanderkirk.
It's on Aloha Friday, May 24th. From HPR2, it's The Conversation. A .03 dunk if you drive drunk.
A lay of Memorial Day memories.
Racing not to be left behind.
A festival with more than double vision.
Plus, the worldview from Al Jazeera. Really green eats in the backyard. And more mainland, less filling in today's reality check.
This is The Conversation on HPR 2. I'm Chris Vanderkirk.
I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. Can a .03 difference in blood alcohol content make a dent in the numbers of drivers who drive impaired? Mothers Against Drunk Driving isn't answering. Some lawmakers are asking the same question, and a federal agency says yes. The National Transportation Safety Board's new recommendations square with Hawaii Island's Dr. Senator. Josh Green may have some additional sensitivity. The state is 51st in the nation with 515 DUI arrests on Hawaii Island to date. And Josh Green joins us this morning. Good morning.
Aloha. Great to see you.
And it's good to have you to talk about this, too, because this is sort of the thing that we talk about around holiday time or when there's been a rash of unfortunate fatalities that have been because of alcohol, and then we kind of let it go fallow. Meanwhile, we've got lots of commercials on TV, particularly pitched toward a very young demographic and making it look like it's the hip, cool, and wonderful thing to do. How would that possibly be in the same conversation with the NTSB's recommendation that we lower blood alcohol content to 0.05?
Well, I think that people have to realize that anytime you drink, you shouldn't drive, first of all. And I'm pretty dismayed about the ability for people to advertise alcohol on TV still. You really struck a lot of the key points already. We have the feds telling us that if we drop the blood alcohol threshold to 0.05, that we will save lives. I think we should do it. I think we should do it here right away. I think we should do it in the next legislative session. You know, every year we see tragic fatalities. I see them as an ER physician, you know, month in, month out on the Big Island, year after year. And we know that the law enforcement personnel only have so much capacity to bust people for DUI. So I think we should do two things. I think we should lower the threshold to 0.05. And at the same time, we should give them more resources to actually catch drunk drivers. You mentioned that about 500 people have been busted on Big Island so far over the first, say, 4 months. That's very consistent with what's happened over the last couple of years. In 2012, there were 1,477 DUI arrests. In 2011, there were 1,435. So they only have a certain capacity to go out and catch the people that are making this terrible mistake. So we need to do those two things to help save our people.
This also presupposes, though, Josh, that we change some attitudes about drinking, because we only know what the capacity can do at this point, which is not as much as perhaps we're going to have to need it to do if you drop the blood alcohol content by 0.03, because 0.05 means ostensibly one drink. And for a lot of people, they say, well, I'm not going to just go to a restaurant and have one drink. I'm not going to just be at a family party and have one drink. And the point is, you don't have to, but just please don't get behind the wheel. That seems to be the defining line. How do you change that mindset?
Well, obviously, year after year with the same results, that hasn't been enough to change people's mindset. I've been kind of purposefully pushing the edge of the envelope, trying to get higher and more strong penalties for individuals that drink and drive. But truth be told, people don't really learn the lesson until that tragedy occurs. And we as a society haven't. Like I just said, we have about the exact same numbers of drunk driving arrests. More or less, we have the same number of fatalities year in, year out. The thing I like about the federal recommendation of 0.05 is it makes things simpler. Pretty clearly, that is just one drink for an average-sized woman, and no more than 2 drinks for an average sized man. Anything more than that, you're going to definitely be beyond the threshold. Remember, if you get a DUI, you're going to lose your license very likely. You're going to have to put the interlock system into your car. But if you kill someone when you've been beyond the threshold, you're going to do time. And you should do time in prison. And that family's never going to get their loved one back. So it is such a serious situation. We have a little over 100 deaths every year in the state of Hawaii. We could cut that down by 40% in reading the report if we really stepped up to the plate. Can you imagine? That's 40 families that don't have to live with that tragedy for the rest of their families' lives. It's such an important thing to do, and it's so simple. I don't see how we don't do it.
With kids especially, there will be situations that we've seen that will certainly happen again, where a kid who's never been involved with alcohol, suddenly it's graduation or there's something fabulous happening and they have enough to cause them to be impaired. We know that kids don't really get judgment until they're not so, they're not kids anymore. How do you start to market the other way when some of these ads just make it look so alluring and so attractive that simply saying 0.05 is not going to be very much of a deterrent to them?
Well, it is hard to change the minds of people that are young. And we all know that there's that that concept of that feeling that we're invulnerable when we're young. Also, people are very impressionable when they're 17, 18, 19, 20 years old. There's no question about that. I think that we just have to step up as leaders of the community. I think our church leaders and our community center leaders and maybe some elected officials and everyone who has an organization, nonprofit people, and we in media all have to just really impress upon young people especially that this is one area where we can't be cavalier. We have to be super careful. There's so many ways to get where you're going with help, having a designated driver, hiring if it's a prom, like we're in prom season, having a limousine driver, having a parent drive a van, having the school provide vans. All these solutions will solve the problem for young people. I'm not advocating drinking, but I'm a realist. I know what happens around celebrations, and I don't even want to be a party pooper, but can you imagine the impact if just one individual not only kills someone when they're drunk driving after their graduation and they go to jail at age 18 or 19, but that family loses the person. So I think we have to have a zero tolerance on this particular issue, because this one is something we can actually deal with and avoid. There's a lot of solutions that can't be solved. This one can be.
And especially this time of year, it's particularly germane because, as you mentioned, here we are in prom season, but we've got weddings and we have graduations and family reunions and all kinds of good reasons where people are happy and aren't necessarily thinking about how much they're consuming, which is fine as long as you've got somebody else who is taking you home. In the short term, before we get to next session with the legislation that you plan to bring out, what is it that you would like to see us try to do in this next little while, which maybe we haven't done so well even in past years?
I'd like people to almost adopt the recommendation without a law right now. I'd like people to think if you've had more than one drink, don't drive. That simple. Keep it that easy. Keep it that simple in your mind. We will see a decrease in the tragedies across the state, especially here at celebration times for graduation and then when we come into the holidays. Please just make that a conscious decision. If you're listening today, volunteer to be the driver for your group's gatherings. Volunteer to be the designated driver for a graduation party. Just spend a little volunteer time in that capacity and you'll save a few lives. And I'll appreciate it in the ER, but those many families across the state who have already endured this tragedy will appreciate you to no end.
Thanks for coming in.
You bet.
Senator and Dr. Josh Green is the chairman of the Health Committee. He also served in the State House from 2004 through 2008. He came to Hawaii with the National Health Corps to practice in underserved areas and in 2009 was named Hawaii Physician of the Year. The National Transportation Safety Board wants Hawaii and all states to lower its blood alcohol content to 0.05. Senator Green says he will introduce legislation to do just that next session. Just a gift.
This is the conversation on statewide member-supported HPR2. Later in the show, Hawaii's way to say I'll remember you, checking out the local talent, and now your quiz.
Call it the revenge of the plants. Well, at least the carnivorous varieties that turn the tables on animals and eat them. We usually think of the Venus fly traps of North Carolina or the tropical pitcher plants of Malaysia. But did you know that Hawaii also has a native carnivorous plant? It's a species of sundew, and though the name may sound charming, it actually sounds the death knell for small insects. The plant's alluring and sparkly tentacles are gluey death traps. Hawaiians recognize the nature of our sundew and called it mikinalo, or fly sucker. And only live insects will do, so don't feed it any raw meat. And as they get all their nutrients from their prey, no fertilizer is necessary to encourage it to bloom. If you want to find the mikinalo in the wild, you'll have to travel to the only island where it's found. Our backyard quiz question for you today, which island is it? Stick with us, and you'll know in about 20 minutes.
You can do it. Feed me some more. Feed me all night long. Cause if you feed me some more, I can grow up big and strong.
Hi, good morning. I'm Ivy Su from the Phoenix Dance Chamber. You're listening to The Conversation on HPR2. Find out more about the show at hawaiipublicradio.org/theconversation.
We're at the start of Memorial Day weekend, and it's time to take a moment to think about the reasons we have the holiday in the first place. Ours are very privileged lives compared to people in most parts of the world, and there are reasons for that, rows and rows of them at the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific and at thousands of gravesites around our islands. 50,000 lei are needed to decorate those markers, and Honolulu City Government is inviting laymakers to City Hall today to sew lei for Memorial Day. Jeannie Ishikawa, Deputy Director of the Departments of Parks and Recreation, is coordinating the effort, and she's with us this morning.
Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Jeannie. It's good to have you. This is a very nice gesture for people to make, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. You know, a lei in Hawaii has such symbolism of aloha and love, and it's a circle of life, you know, is what it represents. So this is a genuine way to say thank you to those who have served our country so bravely and courageously.
One of the lovely sights of this time of year is if you happen to be up at Punch Bowl to see kids walking from gravesite to gravesite with lei. But we need a lot of them, don't we?
Yes, we do. We want to be able to collect enough lei for each gravesite at the National Cemetery of the Pacific and also at the Kaneohe Veterans Cemetery.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Which is roughly how many? 50,000?
Roughly 50,000.
How many do, you know, is there any estimate of how many we have so far, how many we can expect?
We always make our account, but we can only do it with the help of the entire state. So collectively, if you imagine if every person donated one lei, we'd make that real quickly. But today is the start of our lei collection, so we'll know, you know, by today how we're doing, and we'll know by tomorrow if we've made it, which I'm sure we will.
But in the past, we have made that rather amazing number.
Yes,
huh?
Yes, we have.
Well, and what you're doing today at City Hall is you're providing the materials, right? You just need willing, skilled hands.
Yes, absolutely. So it's from 11 o'clock to 1 o'clock at Honolulu Hale, and it's solely for a Memorial Day event. And we will be in the courtyard with tables piled with, you know, flower blossoms. And we have the lei needles and string. We'll also have entertainment. We'll have a visit from the current 2013 lei queen and first princess. So they'll be there to entertain and so lei with us and share meaning of lei with everyone.
How long has this been kind of formalized as a city-county tradition?
This is the 64th annual Mayor's Memorial Day.
Is that right?
Yes, yes.
I didn't realize it went back that far. Yeah. That's remarkable, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. And a nice coincidence is that 49 years ago is when the National Cemetery of the Pacific was open to the public.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a nice coincidence that it coincided with that.
Suppose you have a pair of willing hands, but you're not all that skilled in making lei. What can you still contribute in some way?
Absolutely. Come on down to Honolulu Hale because we will have lei making demonstrations for both flower lei and la'i or tea leaf lei making, you know, to learn how to braid it.
Uh-huh.
So this is a great opportunity if any of your listeners have some time from 11 to 1. If you're visiting, visiting our islands, please come down and learn, you know, and have fellowship with everyone who's there for the same purpose of honoring our veterans. It'll be a great event.
So you could actually learn from scratch today.
Yes. And if you can't make it today, we're also having a sew a lei for Memorial Day Part 2 tomorrow on Saturday.
Also at City Hall?
No, tomorrow's one is for the first time we are doing this in collaboration with the State Department of Agriculture.
Uh-huh.
So this is a first time event that we're going to be doing on Saturday, and it's going to be at their plant quarantine branch, which is located at 1849 Awiki Street, which is right off of Sand Island Road. And what we're going to be doing collaboratively is we need leis for all, you know, we need leis to memorialize our veterans. And they are going to be promoting local flowers, you know, for the leis to make leis. So it's a very good cross promotion of two very good intentions.
Well, Jeannie, it sounds as if the good intentions are kind of expanding. Yeah.
And that's a good thing because I think, you know, the community, you know, needs to get involved in something like this. It's a simple gesture. And, you know, if you can't make a lei, you can always, you know, I mean, if you can't come out to the sew a lei event, you can always make a lei at home and drop it off, or you can buy a lei and drop it off. You know, we'll take all donations.
You get a chance to talk to the people who come by for this thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What kind of things do they say to you?
You know, I think initially they come out of curiosity, but what happens in the process of sewing the lei or in the process of on Sunday when the leis are placed in the graves, there really is an emotional tug and a realization of how many, as you so graciously said in your opening, how many rows and rows of markers there are and how many lives were given, you know, for what we enjoy today.
You know, it's tough when you see those rows and rows, and when you, particularly if you go to the Memorial Day ceremony, it's pretty overpowering.
Yes, it is. Yes. Yeah.
And yet, you know, in the face of something overpowering like that, it's kind of that comfort that a simple gesture provides. Is that part of what's going on here?
Yes, exactly. Because that is what some people do say. You know, they'll drive up and they say, you know, I bought a lei. Sorry, it's just one. And we're like, no, if everyone did that, you know, that's just super. You know, every lei counts and every lei is a gesture of aloha.
And you kind of, there's that feeling, almost a little bit of a helpless feeling of wanting to do something.
Correct.
In the face of something as overpowering as this.
Correct, yeah.
Well, Jeannie, it's great to have you on the show. And
thank you. And may I just say that again, today, 11 to 1 at Honolulu Hale, mm-hmm. Saturday from 9 to 2 at the State Department of Agriculture, 1849 Awiki Street. And on Monday, open to the public, 8:30, at the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific is the actual 64th annual Mayor's Memorial Day ceremony.
Now, is that the start of the ceremony at 8:30?
Correct.
So yep. you'd want to head up the hill
maybe half
hour or so
Correct.
Beforehand.
Yep. And we do have the bus service shuttle set up at the Alapai station. So you can call the bus for shuttle information.
Yeah, great. Virginia, it's good to get updated on all
Thank
that
you.
Stuff.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks very much for coming on the show. Jeannie Ishikawa is the Deputy Director of the Department of Parks and Recreation for the City and County of Honolulu. And you can sew a lei for Memorial Day today between 11 and 1 at Honolulu Hale. Details are on hpr2.org. Ika nani ulu vehi
Support for The Conversation comes from Diamond Head Theater. On stage next is the musical The Goodbye Girl, featuring the tunes of Marvin Hamlisch, opening tonight. Tickets and information at diamondheadtheater.com.
Looking to Skype with a certain senior? Yearning to FaceTime with those faraway grandkids? We can help. I'm Flora Lichtman. Join me on Science Friday for some tech tips for older adults. Plus, why houses with dogs might be more diverse, germ-wise, and predicting tornadoes. That's on Science Friday from NPR.
This morning from 9 to 11, right after The Conversation.
HBR listeners who are also members recognize the vital connection between their support and the station's health. Mahalo to Carol Collette of Honolulu, Edward and Ginny Klein of Kailua, and Timothy Halliday of Kailua for their membership gifts. Many members prefer the convenience of giving monthly through the station's lifetime membership program. Choose the amount you want to give, adjust it at any time in the future, and you'll be secure in knowing you've done your part. Information and a downloadable gift form are at hpr2.org. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. It's 8:27. You're listening to The Conversation on statewide, member-supported HPR2. University of Hawaii is on the hunt for a new president, and that has critics revisiting concerns about the relatively few local hires in top positions. For a little deja vu all over again, Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair joins us for today's reality check. Hi, Chad.
Hi, Beth Ann, and happy Friday to you and yours.
And back at you. We'll see what kind of a happy Friday it ends up being after the regents have their meeting, their closed-door session later today.
That's right. They are meeting to discuss a personnel matter, specifically hiring a new university president. And because of that, it's an executive session, and so we are not privy to what's going on, even though it's a very important decision, an important leader like the UH president.
And when we talk about not only the president, but other top executives at the university, looking at who we've gotten from elsewhere, wherever that may be, as opposed to locally homegrown talent, there's a big disparity.
Yeah, Aaliyah Wong has a really nice story that's up on our site right now. By the way, it's kind of hard to remember. We actually hired a national search firm, paid them $100,000 to hire Marcy Greenwood. She came from the University of California system. Of her 13 predecessors, the people that were in the job before her, only one of them was from the mainland. And big UH names like Tom Apple, the Manoa Chancellor, the UH Hilo Chancellor, Donald Strini, the Athletic Director, Ben Jay, all recruited from out of state. So it is heavy on the mainland side for people in top positions at the university.
So if we have all but one of Greenwood's 13 predecessors who came from the mainland, doesn't that sort of tell us that we don't really value growing people here at home?
That certainly is one message that a person can walk away with. You know, the Senate, the state Senate, had a resolution this session in which they encouraged the regents to think local, to give preference even to local candidates. The argument was someone from Hawaii understands Hawaii, has local sensibilities, if you will. That resolution died. It would have been non-binding anyway. The counter argument is that a lot of higher education experts, I mean, this is really the mantra across the country, that recruiting nationally is critical to ensuring that a university maintains its edge in the global marketplace. That also explains why we pay a university president, as we did in the case of Marcy Greenwood, still do actually, over $400,000 plus a housing allowance. You got to get the good folks in order to attract other good folks to keep your university competitive.
Keeping it competitive and not keeping a silo mentality.
Right, exactly. And it's a difficult thing. I mean, the UH system is very big, and it's on all the islands. There are, tens of thousands of students and faculty and staff. And, of course, as we saw from the Wonder Blunder investigation, there are a lot of problems related to running that. But Marcy Greenwood's not going to have to worry about that much longer. She will be leaving before the end of her term. I think September is when she's stepping down.
That may be good for her, but as far as the university that's had some sufficient turnover in the last,
right,
you know, 5, 10, 15 years, it'd be nice to find someone who knows it well, and will stay there with us.
pressure is on the regents right now.
Well, and we'll see what happens by the end of today. Have a good weekend, Chad. We'll talk to you on
Monday. Thank you, Beth Ann. Look forward to it. Bye-bye.
Chad Blair is the political reporter for CivilBeat.com. Well, it's a Friday, and it may be the start of the Memorial Day weekend, but we're already looking forward to what's happening next week coming out of the news department. Bill Dorman joins us for a look at, or giving us a little bit of a preview of what you're working on right now.
You bet. Well, as you say, Memorial Day weekend, Beth Ann, and that's, you know, always a marker for mainland folks, especially in terms of start of the travel season, of the summer season. And that's a big focus for us here in Hawaii, of course. And Tuesday, related to that, we get an updated forecast for the general fund from the Council on Revenues. Now, it's a pretty educated guess, I think, for this to go up a bit. Still some questions to watch out there in terms of visitors as the summer season goes on. We've been hearing about some drop-off on some of the plane seats, on some of the arrival expectations. But still, there are a couple of other items to watch. One interesting thing, and we got a reminder of it this past week, visitors from Japan, you know, that remains such a critical market for us in Hawaii, and they had a big hit in their stock market this week. They had a drop of 7% in the Nikkei on Thursday. Now, the economy still is fine. There's a lot of stimulus there. The market still has done very well this year, and a lot of people say that that was just a quick reaction. But again, the yen is stronger than it used to be. It's about more than 100 to the dollar right now, so that means Japanese currency doesn't go as far as it used to for visitors. So those are some of the things that people are keeping an eye on. But it'll be interesting to get some of the details from the Council of Revenues in terms of where this goes.
And even though that is, you know, a projection, and we know that things go up and they go down, the impact of those numbers that are felt emotionally, that's what we see come out in the numbers that we see from the projections in the Council on Revenues. People reacting so many times to not necessarily the bump that they felt last week, but the one that they think might be happening a month from now or 2 months from now.
Exactly. It's a very forward-looking, not even science or more of a craft and sort of a bit of necromancy in that. But that is that anticipation. And then that's, again, just sort of part of the soup that is mixed in. And so whenever you have a group like the Council of Revenues coming up saying these are not only our expectations, but these are our assumptions about it. And whatever part of the economy of the state of Hawaii you're hooked into, this is important for you to pay attention to.
Assumptions are tough things. It's very much like dancing on shifting sand. You think it's fine for the moment, and then something else changes. And you can't cover all contingencies, but some of it, and how we do some of those projections. We've got to put some trust in something.
You know? It's true. You got to have a starting point.
Where are you going to go? That's
exactly
the point. And that's why we're looking at this particular one for how it's going to ratchet out during the summer.
Yeah, that comes out Tuesday, and that may set the tone for a bit for some of the rest of the week, too. We'll see
how things go. A lot more will be happening once we get into next week. We won't be procrastinating too much about how we're going to get on with what we need to do, because there's so much of it to happen. There just seems summertime happens and there's a lot going on, even when we think it's sort of settling down. It never really does it?
Yeah, hard to believe Memorial Day weekend's already here.
It's here. It's here. Welcome to it. Thanks. A lot of island teachers are saying, we told you, the No Child Left Behind, meet it or beat it benchmarks just don't work. The ambitious Bush-era education reform with standard test measurements was a tough sell in Hawaii, and now the state has something better. The Strive High Performance System, approved by the U.S. Department of Education this month, replaces many of the NCLB's outdated requirements. For UH College of Education Associate Professor Tara O'Neill, the focus on college and career readiness and the ability to customize education for students and schools makes all the difference. Tara O'Neill joins us now. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, thanks for having me.
After all of these years, I mean, it's almost like, you know, really, really, we knew that having standards that, A, were not necessarily good ones to begin with, and secondarily, to say that nothing measures movement toward those standards, just whether you got there or whether you didn't, that having that wasn't the way to go. And it seemed to be a knee-jerk reaction in a lot of ways. And now we're backing off of that and saying, maybe we need to look at how we approach better learning and how we create a more customized environment for teachers, for schools, and certainly for the system as a whole.
Well, so I'll politely say hindsight is 20/20, and so I mean that's my polite give to No Child Left Behind. But certainly, data and research has shown for years in teachers' own experiences. You talk to any teacher, and they'll tell you it just doesn't work. And only having one mark of success for a student creates just a remarkable opportunity for failure that doesn't promote good learning, that doesn't promote good self-esteem, that doesn't promote us moving forward. So the shift to the Strive High program or performance system, I think, will be a really presents really wonderful opportunities for showing growth over time, as opposed to showing in this one discrete moment did you get a 300. But it also does a really nice job of collecting multiple data points as opposed to the one test score data point, and will allow us to customize how it is that we're working with schools and teachers and the system as a whole in order to provide a better educational network for our students.
There have been a lot of teachers who have discreetly told us that, regardless of whatever is happening with a particular set of standards or a particular way that the DOE wants classrooms run, that they're doing what they're doing because they feel it's in the best interest of their classrooms and their kids. And a lot of really great creative stuff came out from that. Is this now giving it the opportunity to come out from the shadows?
That's what I'm hopeful for. I think the Strive High program is going to allow for more project-based learning, more critical thinking, more place-based kind of instruction. And that's not it's instruction that's been happening. It's instruction that's almost been happening in a subversive kind of way. Teachers do what is good for kids, and we have amazing teachers in this state who have been doing wonderful work with their students over the years. Regardless of what AYP or HSA test scores are reporting, they've been doing this wonderful work for the past many years. And so the Strive High performance system, ideally, and we'll see how implementation goes, and they'll start rolling out implementation this summer with the administrations in the school systems. But ideally, it'll create the space to really honor the work that's already happening. I work with a group of right now, a small cohort of 20 teachers that are connecting their classrooms to the Worldwide Voyage of Hokulea that will take place over the next 4 years. They're integrating their teaching and learning of science and math and social studies and arts, all through exploration of the culture and structure of Native Hawaiian voyaging and indigenous navigation skills. And all of that work was already happening. What Strive High, I hope, will do is bring that work to light and honor it in the way that it should have always been honored.
Part of this, though, is logical. I mean, none of us exists in some little place that says, I am only doing math now, or I'm only doing language arts, or I'm only, functioning in the scientific world. Human beings were supposed to be well integrated, and we've said this for years, that we want well integrated, holistic. If you had a nickel for every time the word holistic was used. There seems to be, though, a lack of real drive to put that holistic perspective into standards that make kids feel and make teachers feel that there is a whole life behind all of this. And you've heard kids say, well, when am I ever going to need math, or when am I ever going to need science? Well, you start looking at life and you see it there all around you. That's a thing that many of the educators who have been doing some of this stuff in the shadows have been trying to connect, and now they have the opportunity not to. But lest we kind of give the idea that we're at the be-all, end-all, this isn't the be-all, end-all for us either.
No, I mean, I think one of the things we really need to think about are what are the value structures that we're embedding our educational system in. You know, college and career readiness, I think, is a wonderful goal. I certainly think it's a vast improvement over test proficiency. But it still really is looking at test performance and commerce, right? Can you pass a test and can you get a job? And while those things are valuable in our society, I think we also have to think about what kind of educated populace do we want? How do we want them to be able to use information? How do we want them civically engaging and interacting? And I don't know that we're yet quite there in addressing that. And we'll see as implementation of Strive High takes place. You know, hopefully we're creating spaces for that kind of work and those kinds of discussions. So I'm hopeful. I think this is a really wonderful move for Hawaii. I think to move away from our very rigid structures of No Child Left Behind will only serve us better. And I think to be able to meet schools' individual needs rather than looking at a one-size-fits-all model will really serve us in the long run.
And certainly make a lot of other teachers and especially students very happy. Thanks, Tara, for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tara O'Neill is an assistant professor at UH Manoa and former public middle school and high school science teacher. Her research focuses on student access, the roles that power, race, and gender play in how youth participate in learning, and the investigation of teacher learning and preparation.
This morning, we stopped to consider carnivorous plants and the only island in Hawaii where you can find the type that is at home here. The sundew plant is lovely to look at, with sparkling beads glinting on its surface. But don't let the pretty picture fool you. Those dewdrops are death traps for tiny insects. Their sticky grasp holds the critters until they give up their struggle and become lunch. And that's the only lunch it can have, so don't try to feed a mikinalo, as the sundew is called in Hawaiian, any raw meat or even fertilizer. You'll probably kill it. To see mikinalo in the wild, you may have to island hop, unless you happen to live there too, but you may need to do some hiking. This member of the sundew family is usually found in the bogs of the Alakai Wilderness, high up in the mystery central plateau of Kauai. Thanks to the Nature Conservancy of Hawaii for this quiz. And if you have one, you can send it to talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Hello, good morning. I'm Alicia Dow from HMSA. You're listening to The Conversation on HPR, Hawaii Public Radio. Join the conversation on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation.
There's no single version of the Polynesian experience. The history and culture of disparate societies spread across a vast area of the planet are naturally as diverse as the geography that defines them, although there are, of course, many common threads. Both the differences and the similarities are being celebrated this weekend at the 12th Annual Kauai Polynesian Festival. Kauilani Kahale Kai is the MC of the event, and she joins us by phone. Good morning.
Aloha kakaiaka, and we'd like to welcome all of you to join us as well here on Kauai this Friday, Saturday. In fact, it starts today, Friday, Saturday,
Sunday. Starts today.
Yeah, today, tonight is, I mean, it's opening. Everybody's setting up right now as we speak, and all the gates will open at 11:30 and start this whole Polynesian experience, and it's quite a festival to put on.
I imagine. First question, you folks ready?
Yep. Okay. We are totally ready. We're ready for tonight and today. It opens at 11:30, goes all the way to what we call POW.
Uh-huh.
POW would be anywhere, you know, between 9-ish or 10-ish. You know, it starts off with the Polynesian experience. And the Polynesian experience, we do a lot of different types of, we have like little villages that are formed, and they do basket weaving, they do coconut husking, and make coconut candy, they do drumming, they do poi balls, and learn how to dance, soale. They do quite a bit of different things in the villages itself. It's almost like a mini Polynesian cultural center.
Well, you know, to that point, Kahialani, the Polynesian experience is pretty diverse. It's more diverse than most people might realize. Is that true?
Yes, it's very diverse. And, you know, we have our major culture, Polynesian cultures with us, like the Hawaiians, the Samoans, the Tahitians, and the Maori, you know, our Maori group. But, you know, we also, this year, adding on our Tongan group, and we'd like to also have our group from the Cook Islands, Marquesas, you know, Marshallese, Fijians. It just broadens as we go along. And I also want to mention that, you know, I mean, our own cultures that we have here mixed in Hawaii that joins along with this, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be one day, you know, to put in all our other cousins, like our Chinese cousins, Japanese cousins, Koreans, all the great guys that make Hawaii what Hawaii is.
Well, and to that, you know, you're talking about a sort of a wide range of experiences and some unifying threads as well.
Yes, yes. And that's, you know, I mean, that's what makes a lot of people want to come here, you know, to gather, because we have such a diverse type of, you know, culture that embraces everyone and says, come and learn, come. We're open to teach you, to want you to feel this great spirit that we have, and share our culture with you. And, you know, when they come to the Polynesian Festival, we definitely give off that spirit of aloha, or spirit of we want you to know more about us. We want you to know more about the culture itself. So as we're there, we learn each and every step, and, you know, they learn how to speak a little bit of the culture itself. And I tell you, you go away with a learning experience.
You know, and frequently an experience that's enjoyable, an experience that is educational, are the same thing, aren't they?
Yes, yes, yes. And this year, especially is a very good year for us, that we teamed up with the Make-A-Wish Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have a special 17-year-old girl come here with her family. And she chose, out of all the festivals in the world, or anything in the world she wanted to do, she wanted to come here to Kauai and do this festival. We were kind of very honored and shocked at the same time, because she could have chose anywhere.
Where's
and
she from?
She wanted to come here to this island with her family and experience this. And we're so grateful to the Make-A-Wish Foundation Hawaii. And you know, the island is opening up to her. And when people heard that she's coming, you know, they want to donate. We have a little girl. Her name is Violet Assumption, who's coming to donate a kamaka ukulele to this girl. And then we have the mayor of Kauai coming. And, you know, we have quite a bit of people just to come to see this little girl as she comes to enjoy herself and her family at the festival.
Where's she coming from?
She's coming from Queensbury, New York.
Really?
Yeah. Can you imagine?
How'd she find out all about, you know, about Polynesian culture, local culture?
Well, her dream was to experience the culture itself, to be a part of the Tahitian and Samoa. I mean, she just felt that she wanted to be a part of that, and see it and experience it. So I guess during the time when she was looking, you know, that she wanted to come to something like this, that she felt that she wanted to come to Hawaii, but then she felt Kauai was the island that she wanted to come to. And, I mean, how fortunate is that, you know? Yeah. I mean, we have quite a bit of rare things here, and to have something like that, I feel, oh, we're so honored to have, like, such a rare stuff.
Well, when,
happened, but, yeah.
When she chose Kauai, I'm sure you agreed with her choice, right?
Yes, it was her choice. And, you know, I feel, you know, Kauai is a very healing island. So I think they're coming here to heal themselves as well as to make this event happen for them and enjoy it. And she will be there on Saturday, and this local group, Bala'au, with Brother Dickie Chang, they will be filming, you know, her and making sure everybody sees her experience and everything. I think it's going to be fabulous.
Well, I'm sure it is. Kauilani, we just got a little bit left, but what makes you say Kauai is a healing island? I'm not saying I disagree, but I'm just interested in why you said that.
I feel the island itself is like a mother. It nurtures a lot of people here, and it nurtures. And you know, I mean, when you need to clear out that heart piece of yours, this is a great place to be. It helps you understand it, and it's a very quiet place as well. So.
That's a very good recommendation, Kauilani.
Yeah, it helps you learn about yourself and what you are all about. Of course, you know, I mean, being with the Polynesian Festival and the Kamanawa Foundation, I mean, Kamanawa Foundation was established in 1994, and it's a Kauai-based nonprofit organization, and our mission is to preserve and promote, perpetuate
well,
the native Hawaiian culture, so...
Kauilani, we've got to run, but
yes.
I'm glad we got a chance to talk about this. And
yeah,
I think a lot of people are going to enjoy themselves.
Hoping so, and we invite all of you to come and be a part of it.
Terrific. Thank you very much. Kauilani Kahalekai is the MC of this weekend's 12th annual Kauai Polynesian Festival. It runs all weekend at Vidina Stadium Soccer Field on Kapule Highway from noon through the evening each day. And details are on our HPR2 website.
Support for today's programming comes from Alaska Airlines, recently named highest in customer satisfaction among traditional North American network carriers by J.D. Power and Associates for the sixth year in a row. AlaskaAir.com.
So she walks over to the car, and with crazy Hulk-like postpartum strength, rips off the side view mirror and throws it on the ground and said, "Now we're even."
Join us for this story and more next time on the Moth Radio Hour from the Public Radio Exchange, PRX.org.
Saturday afternoon at 2. Support for the conversation comes from the First Unitarian Church of Honolulu, located at 2500 Pali Highway, Unitarians of HI.org.
Beth Ann, you talked earlier in the show about changing DUI standards, and people tend to think of the effects of a DUI arrest as something, the effect on them. And I think Dr. Green brought up an excellent point, is think about how you'd feel if you hurt somebody else while you were too drunk to be behind the wheel. That would never leave you, and it would obviously ruin the lives of many other people as well.
Sometimes we're not very good about being that empathic.
Exactly.
We just feel like we are in our own little bubbles, and we are so told that you have to individually do what you need to do and take care of you and all the rest of it that we forget the impact that our actions have on other people. And as simple as that may sound, particularly with something like drunk driving, there isn't any going back.
No, there isn't. And 40 families a year that would have a loved one that they now don't have. That's a powerful number.
Particularly this time of year. That's going to do it for us for this week. come Monday, we'll be back right here with you, talking to a young veteran and his take on Memorial Day and active duty again.
We'll sleep with sharks on Maui and get ready for a Les Mis casting call.
I don't know what the difference between those two things may be. You can talk back to your radio anytime you like. And if you want to hear from us, you can find us on Facebook at Hawaii Conversation or tweet us at HI Conversation or at Because HPR. And yes, email still works. That's talkback at hawaiipublicradio.org.
If you want to hear today's show again, get another past show or links to more information, check the archive on the HPR2 website, hpr2.org. Our executive producer is Beth Ann Kozlovich.
Lillian Song produces the program. Matty DeShazo is our production assistant. Andy Walters, Rylan Suahisa, and Alex Ellenberg are our tricky interns.
The Backyard Quiz theme was written for us by John DeMello. Have a good weekend, or whatever is natural for you. I'm Chris Van.
I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. We'll see you on Memorial Day and pick up the conversation.